Afternoon. Ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, opposing counsel, I'm Michael Petticone. I represent appellant Robert Whitaker. This is his appeal from the jury verdict, and there are three separate arguments that form the basis of the appeal. The first argument concerns the trial judge's pretrial ruling concerning the extent to which plaintiff's lone expert would be allowed to testify at trial. The expert was a chiropractor. It is a chiropractor. The trial judge ruled that the chiropractor would not be allowed to testify as to causation. He would be allowed to testify as to the injuries that he treated, the treatment that he rendered, the medical bills that were incurred, whether those injuries were permanent and the extent of those injuries. However, she did not allow him to testify as to causation. I submit that that's an inconsistent decision and that there's a clear error of law. The fact that the trial judge allowed the chiropractor to testify at all allowed the jury to make the reasonable assumption that there was some relevance, some connection between the injuries that he treated and the auto accident which gave rise to the claim. The second basis for the appeal is the defendant's motion for a judgment as a matter of law. After the close of the plaintiff's case, I made a motion. The basis of my motion was that the Supreme Court decision in Rayfield versus Power required a competent medical expert to testify to a legal nexus between bodily injury and the auto accident, and that had not occurred in this particular case. The trial judge denied my motion. The third basis for the appeal is that at the end of defendant's closing argument, the plaintiff's attorney made a reference to objecting to a jury instruction. The jury instructions had been given prior to closing arguments. When the plaintiff's attorney made a comment that she needed to object to a jury instruction, the trial judge made a statement to the jury that for purposes of this trial, reasonable chiropractic probability was to be considered the same as reasonable medical probability when it came to an expert testifying about injuries and so on. And I would submit that, again, that's a clear error of law in that while the legislature has stated that a chiropractor can testify as to injuries and causation and permanency, they have limited the chiropractor to testifying to a reasonable chiropractic probability and not a reasonable medical probability. I would submit that it's also clear from Rayfield versus Power that the Supreme Court has required the connection to be made by a medical expert and so to a reasonable medical probability, and that there's a difference between medical probability and chiropractic probability.
What is the difference?
The difference is that under the statutes, a person who practices medicine is required to attend a medical school or a school of osteopathy and certain other rigorous requirements. On the other hand, a chiropractor is not required to do that. The statute, I would submit, also is very, very clear that certain individuals can hold themselves out as practicing medicine or being medical doctors, and that the statute clearly excludes chiropractors from that group.
Well, the trouble I'm having is this. If I understand your argument, you're saying that a chiropractor may be allowed to testify to a chiropractic certainty or whatever, but that doesn't matter because it doesn't help here because you have to have somebody who can testify to a medical certainty, and a chiropractor can't do that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the holding.
So what's the point of the statute that says the chiropractors can testify?
Your Honor, I'd be making an assumption or offering my opinions, but I would submit that the reason for the statute was because the prior law was very unclear about whether a chiropractor could testify at all at trial as an expert. The legislature cleared up part of the problem by saying, yes, a chiropractor can testify, but they limited it to a reasonable chiropractic probability, because there are plaintiffs that want their chiropractors to come in and testify as expert witnesses, and now they're entitled to have that done.
Let's parse that phrase reasonable chiropractic probability for a minute and talk about it in practical terms. If I understand any sense to the statute at all, and don't take away from it the lobbying power of the Delaware Chiropractic Society and put some practical purpose into the statute, it is to allow chiropractors to appear as expert witnesses and testify within their realm of knowledge about the relationship between an accident and an injury that they as chiropractors can recognize as an existing injury that they can treat, and they can testify as expert witnesses. And in the course of chiropractic, this is the kind of injury we ordinarily see and treat, and it's consistent with what I understand to have taken place in the accident. That's fair testimony, isn't it?
Your Honor, yes.
Now, what they could not testify to is either the obvious, that within a reasonable medical probability, what I just treated is related to the accident, because they don't have that expertise. And they couldn't testify to injuries beyond what's normally treated by a chiropractor. Like there's an adjacent to the bone that I would treat, internal organ, which was damaged, and I noted it because as I treated for the bone injury, popping whatever it is back into place, that there was evidence of palpitation or some other problem that's consistent with an injury to the stomach or the liver or something like that. They couldn't testify to that.
I would hope not, Your Honor. But from the chiropractor's testimony at this trial, he offered his view that because he had studied anatomy and physiology, and because he had been practicing chiropractic for 3 years, that he was essentially an expert on all quote-unquote medical matters.
Well, let's assume it's the trial judge's role to narrow the parameter to what the statute allows chiropractors to appear and testify about. I'm only talking about trying to put a practical twist on the statute. There has to be some reason for the statute, the General Assembly saying chiropractors can testify as experts, but within their realm. And then somehow our case law has to be consistent with that to say that under certain circumstances, chiropractors can offer their opinion about a nexus between an accident and an injury, but only an injury that can be identified as a chiropractic injury, if there is an injury that can be so limited.
I agree with that.
Is that fair?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But in this case, your position is it should be reversed because the trial judge not only allowed but instructed the jury that they could consider the chiropractor's expert testimony on the nexus of medical injuries in the accident.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. I think I understand.
But when is an injury not a medical injury?
When it's psychiatric, emotional, mental.
Well, isn't that part of the field of medicine? I mean, isn't this a term that is, in using this phraseology, it's the type of injury as opposed to the type of expert who can address it?
Your Honor, I only go by the fact that there was the legislature, in chronologically speaking, the legislature amended the statute to allow chiropractors to testify to a reasonable chiropractic probability or certainty. I believe it was after that amendment that the Supreme Court came down with Rayfield versus Power and said that the legal nexus between injury and accident had to be offered by competent medical testimony or a competent medical expert, as opposed to competent medical or chiropractic expert. I understand, as from a practical point of view, that there's a difference between medical doctors and chiropractors. There's a difference between the amount of education that's required, the what they have to go through to be certified as either a doctor or a chiropractor. And I submit that the legal distinction is now we're going to allow medical expert testimony regarding causation, but not chiropractic testimony.
Well, if we accept your position, what will a chiropractor be allowed to testify about?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that the chiropractor would still be entitled to testify to causation, as the statute says. The distinction I guess that I'm making, or what I'm finding, is that plaintiffs want their chiropractor to testify to bolster their medical experts, and that's fine. Chiropractors can do that. As long as there's an otherwise adequate foundation, they should be allowed to testify as to their opinions regarding causation. But I don't see anything in the legislature or the law that says a chiropractor could be or should be the only expert offered by the plaintiff. So if a plaintiff or a plaintiff's attorney wants their chiropractor to testify, that can be done. But I would submit it's still not sufficient to meet the legal standard for a jury to find causation.
Why would there be a problem if a chiropractor were the plaintiff's only expert witness offered for the purpose of showing the nexus between the accident and an injury that the chiropractor actually treated? If the chiropractor said, I saw the patient after the accident, the patient had no complaints about low back pain before the accident, at least that's what the history suggests. He or she has had complaints after the accident. I've treated him within my realm of chiropractic, as any chiropractor would do. Chiropractic, I'll use the phrase, apologize. Chiropractic medicine, as they call it from time to time. But this is what I was trained to do, and I believe that I just treated, consistent with that specialty, an injury that I believe relates to the accident. There would be no reason under the statute, because it's like a subpart of what we normally think of as medical testimony, as opposed to, let's say, a neurologist. Neurologists are often trained in, board certified in psychiatry as well as in neurology, because they deal with less substantially obvious pain, nerve damage, that type of thing, as opposed to, say, an orthopod who fixes a broken bone. A chiropractor couldn't testify to the kind of associated problems that would come with a nerve injury, because chiropractors don't generally deal with those associated problems. So that would be medical testimony that the statute didn't contemplate the chiropractor would be competent to testify to. But is there anything about the statute that suggests that the General Assembly did not intend for chiropractors to be able to testify about the nexus between an accident and an injury, so long as the injury that they observed or treated could be defined within the realm of chiropractic medicine?
Your Honor, I've argued before to a judge in Superior Court that there is something in the statute to that effect, and that is that the statute states that a chiropractor can testify as long as there's an otherwise adequate basis for their an otherwise adequate foundation for their testimony. And I argued to the Superior Court that otherwise adequate foundation meant corroborating testimony from a medical doctor.
Well, couldn't it just as easily, or perhaps even more likely, mean that there has to be a showing that a chiropractor does in fact have knowledge about this particular type of injury, so that if somebody has a pierced eardrum, for example, a chiropractor might not be in a position to give an opinion as to what caused a pierced eardrum, because that may not be within his or her realm of training.
I agree, Your Honor, and I would submit that the question or the answer is easy when you're comparing a pierced eardrum with a soft tissue injury, but I would submit that when you start down that road, it's going to be difficult, because at some point the trial judge then is going to have to make a decision about whether this is a soft tissue injury, whether this is a nerve injury, whether this is a muscle injury, whether this is a bone injury, whether it's a combination of one or more of those or something else, and then whether the chiropractor is qualified to testify based on the trial judge's decision about what type of injury it is. And I would submit that that's putting too much of a burden on the trial judges.
Well, that's a Daubert-type burden that the trial judges accept with acclamation, don't they? Don't they look forward to these kinds of decisions?
I don't know about looking forward, Your Honor, but I believe it's a little bit different in that the trial judge, even with the Daubert question, doesn't have to first determine what type of injury there is or that's being discussed. What they do, I would submit, is a little bit easier, which is look at the testimony that's being offered and then look at, see whether that expert is qualified on that issue.
Well, that's what I mean. That's routine for a trial judge.
Yes. But then to make the connection about whether that's the injury that's being discussed or that the plaintiff has, it takes it another step.
Well, whether it's the injury that the plaintiff has or not is ultimately a jury question, right?
Ultimately a jury question, but to get to the jury, it has to go through the trial judge.
Okay. Do you want to save your remaining 3 minutes or so?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Good afternoon. I'm Carol Antoff. If it pleases the court, I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff below, Beverly Houston. There are three issues on appeal before you. The first is whether the trial court abused its discretion on its evidentiary rulings regarding Dr. Letzky, the chiropractor's testimony. Defendant contends that it did by allowing the chiropractor to testify at all. Plaintiff contends that it did by not allowing the chiropractor to testify as to causation. The second issue is whether the trial court erred in denying defendant's motion for judgment as a matter of law. This requires a de novo determination as to whether the evidence presented and the inferences that could be drawn therefrom present an issue of fact that a jury could reasonably decide for the plaintiff. The third issue is probably the most far-reaching. That is whether the trial court statement to the jury that there was no distinction between the terms reasonable chiropractic probability and reasonable medical probability. I think the issue here is whether that was a misapplication of law or whether that was merely a clarification of the jury instruction that the court had already presented to the jury. If it's a clarification, the standard would be a plain error because there was no objection by the defendant at the time that she made this instruction. For plain error, it would have to be clearly prejudicial to the point that the jury could not apply the accurate law and make an intelligent decision on the facts that was presented to it. The judge has the responsibility to instruct the jury, and this cannot be controlled by what the parties want. However, the issue is whether the court actually applied legal principles correctly when making the statement to the jury. Then it's a de novo look at whether the trial court's instructions stated the law correctly. And in this case, you must view the instructions as a whole. And as a whole, the instruction in particular about the medical testimony was that you heard from medical experts who were required to testify to a reasonable degree of medical probability. I believe that the problem here is that the defendant's whole appeal is based on his dislike for the fact that a chiropractor might be able to testify as a medical provider. I think that what I call might be the far-reaching issue is the definition of direct medical testimony. I think we need to reconcile the fact that causation is a jury question with the fact that causation requires direct testimony by an expert. And I think that the court has already done this in the case of Cromwell versus George in 2004, 84A, second, 641. You actually did not have to reach the decision or make a decision on whether the chiropractor's not being allowed to speak to causation was reversible error. We found it harmless in that case because in that particular case, a neurologist also had testified. But
well, in this case, there was, at least from your perspective, did the defense expert all provide the link on causation?
I believe that that's why, in this case, if you were to affirm all of the court's rulings, that you would find also that this was it would be harmless, probably harmless error, because Dr. Gilman did testify. He said specifically, when asked under direct examination by Mr. Pettacomb, what his opinion in reasonable degree of medical probability was that was of the effect of the motor vehicle accident, and the Dr. Gilman testified that it was that she had at most soft tissue injuries.
I'd like you to respond to this concern that your opponent has raised, that in any kind of case like this, if there's a chiropractor on one side and a medical doctor on the other side, the side which has the medical doctor is going to emphasize those credentials and imply this witness is only a chiropractor. My witness is a medical doctor. And when the judge says that they're the same, doesn't that just pull the rug out from under the one who's arguing my witness is a medical doctor?
I think that if it were presented that way, that it could. But in this particular case, she did not say that the chiropractor's testimony was equivalent to a medical doctor's testimony. She said that the legal standard of chiropractic probability was equivalent to the legal standard of medical probability. There's a difference. And I think that that's an important difference in this particular case.
Do you think the statement that she made and when she made it was one that the jury could understand? I get the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it was after the charge, and it was almost in isolation.
It was after the charge, Your Honor. I didn't object to her charging as medical expert because she was linking both the chiropractor and Dr. Gilman, Dr. Lutsky and Dr. Gilman, as medical experts. So I didn't see that there was any objection to it.
Well, if she did that, is that correct as a matter of law? To refer them both as medical experts?
Well, that's where the issue, and we actually need this court's help, is to definitively define what would be considered medical. I don't believe that the court, or that certainly not I, or even the jury, considers a chiropractor a medical doctor. It's whether a chiropractor can give the medical testimony that's required. And by medical, if you mean health, something in the healthcare line, something that provides services to help someone who is injured, then chiropractic fits into that. I think that the legislature recognized that when they made this statute, which is 24 Delaware Code, Section 717.
Was that statute argued to the trial judge? I didn't see it cited in her decision.
It wasn't cited in the decision, and our pretrial was not recorded, and so we do have a difference in recollections on exactly what had happened in that case at that time. Causation was definitely ruled. The chiropractor was definitely ruled that he could not speak on causation. His chiropractor's report definitely did have a lot of discussion about forces and motions, but that wasn't the basis of his. Of his opinion on whether she was injured. That was his overzealous liking to educate everybody on the importance of chiropractic. And I did inform the court, as I had informed Dr. Lutsky, that he was not allowed to testify as to forces. He was allowed to testify as to what he knew. And the court did find, after extensive voir dire, that he was qualified as a chiropractic expert, and she did find that he had foundation to testify. The foundation was not only his education training, but also the fact that he had examined and treated this patient. That all made adequate foundation for his testimony. That meets the adequate foundation requirement of the statute. And since he was also licensed, since he was only talking about injuries within the scope of chiropractic practice, and since he did testify to a reasonable degree of chiropractic certainty, he met all the qualifications to be able to testify. Since he had a foundation for the permanency, I believe the foundation is equally adequate for the paragraph right above that, which meant that he had an adequate foundation and was qualified to testify as to causation also.
Yeah, I'm correct that your client was successful.
Yes.
yet you've got a cross appeal.
I have a cross appeal.
And is that just in case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if the decision is affirmed, then you're content in terms of the trial judge's ruling on whether the chiropractor could speak about causation becomes irrelevant.
Yes, okay. That's it exactly. That's what I'm asking this court, is that you affirm all the trial court's rulings on all the issues that are subject to the defendant's appeal, and then by affirming those, you will find that the denial of the chiropractor from being allowed to give causation testimony is harmless error. In this particular case, I'm asking that you affirm the lower court's trial. And
if the court were inclined to get into this, do you see a distinction to be drawn between chiropractic expert testimony and medical expert testimony for purposes of the type of injury that would be within a chiropractor's field of knowledge?
I think that if you're asking me how the court could decide whether this would be allowable or...
No, what I'm asking is whether the law does or should recognize some difference of level, if you will, or difference of degree or expertise or whatever. We've got a statute that says the chiropractors can testify, right?
Yes.
As experts.
Yes.
We've obviously... Doctors, medical doctors, can testify as experts. Is there any reason why there should be a distinction between what a chiropractor can testify to, as long as it's within the chiropractor's area of expertise, versus what a medical doctor can, in terms of the way the jury may be instructed, or limitations at a trial? Or is it your view that the two have become co-equals within their overlapping spheres of expertise?
I don't want to say co-equals because I don't want to give the court the impression that I think a chiropractor is equal in education or knowledge or training with a physician. But I do want to say co-equal in that I believe that once qualified and once passing the five steps of the Cunningham versus McDonald eligibility or admissibility standards, five steps there, that this court developed in Cunningham and referred to and used again in Eskin versus Carden. Once he's qualified, once they find out that the evidence is relevant, once you realize that the information is based on data that was reliable or relied on in this field, you find out that the testimony will assist the jury in some matter, once you make sure that the testimony isn't unfairly prejudicial, I think that saying that reasonable degree of chiropractic certainty, which is a statute, doesn't need to be distinct from medical probability or electrical engineering probability or biomechanical, as long as the jury understands that an expert is allowed to testify and needs to testify to a reasonable degree of that expert's area of expertise. By lumping a chiropractor in with a physician and calling it medical expert, I don't believe that that's an error. I don't believe that that can put emphasis to a jury. I think that the credibility of a witness and the weight of that they give to a witness's testimony has always been within the realm of the jury, and I think that the common sense that a jury is called upon to use, some of them will like chiropractors and some of them won't, but I don't think anybody will equate a chiropractor with a medical doctor. So if the defense is saying, I only have a medical doctor and they have a chiropractor, and my medical doctor, you know, knows all this and the chiropractor doesn't, the jury is free to make the same conclusion that the defense did in this particular case, that, you know, that the chiropractor isn't worth listening to, and they're free to decide that he is free listening to.
I've looked at the August 18, 2004 order from the Superior Court judge, and there's simply a flat statement that the chiropractor may not testify as to the causal link between plaintiff's injury and the accident. There's no explanation of why. What was the analysis that led to that conclusion, as you understand it, given the fact that the statute defines very clearly the limits of the practice of chiropractic, as it refers to it.
We actually had the same discussion pre-trial in chambers that shows up several times during the course of Dr. Lutsky's testimony, a sidebar, and that is that the trial court did not believe that any person who did not see the injured plaintiff the day before the accident and now sees him the day of the accident can say with certainty that this motor vehicle accident caused this injury.
They didn't see him before the accident?
Well, the trial
couldn't testify to causation?
That's what the trial court said, that that causation is uncertain in all conditions. And in this condition, our chiropractor did not treat the plaintiff before.
So, based upon that ruling, a doctor couldn't testify as to causation either, unless the doctor happened to have been treating the person before the accident.
Unfortunately, the order doesn't say that's the reason for that conclusion. There's just a conclusory statement, and as Justice Berger points out, in my 35 years' experience, hundreds of times, independent medical examiners testified to causation, and they've never met the patient plaintiff before in their lives until sometimes a year or two after the accident.
Your Honor, I'm not going to argue with you on that because that's the argument that I made.
Well, yeah. But this is the extent of the record that explains why the trial judge reached the conclusion she did about the chiropractor not being able to testify on causation. Is that it?
Well, there is in the trial record during Dr. Lutsky's testimony in that portion of it. After he was voir dired, I renewed my objection to her ruling that he could not speak to causation, and she said that she was considering, she was reconsidering it, but that her concern was that no one, not even a medical doctor, was her exact words, could testify that a specific accident caused a specific injury if they had not seen them immediately before and immediately after. That was her ruling, and because during the course of her asking Dr. Lutsky, could he, you know, what was his basis? Was it just the history that she said? And he said that it was partly the history, partly his examination, partly the training that he went through with other motor vehicle accidents, his experience. But she said, can you tell that it was happened within the last 24 hours? He said he could tell when he first saw her that it was an acute injury. And she said, what do you mean by acute? He said that it happened within the last 72 hours. And the judge ruled that just did not meet the qualifications to overcome her interpretation of the standard needed for actual causation testimony.
Okay.
I think I probably...
Can you ask me or answer me this question just so that I'm clear on it? The General Assembly has defined the practice of chiropractic. It includes, but is not limited to, the diagnosing and locating of misaligned or displaced vertebrae, subluxation complex, using x-rays and other diagnostic test procedures. Practice of chiropractic includes the treatment through manipulation, adjustment of the spine and other skeletal structures, and the use of adjunctive procedures, not otherwise prohibited by this chapter. That's what your witness did in this case with this patient, is that right?
Yes, and I'm glad that you brought that up because the definition of chiropractic practice includes, as you said, diagnosis and treatment. And under Black's Law Dictionary, diagnosis is a medical term which refers to discovering the source of symptoms. So I don't think that it's misleading anybody by saying a chiropractor is allowed to give is giving medical testimony.
Can I go at this perhaps a slightly different way? I'm looking at page A11, and the court says, with respect to your renewed request on the ruling on causation, the court says, in listening to the doctor, the issue I have with regard to causation on this specific accident is also related to the fact that this doctor did not examine the patient beforehand, as opposed to, so if he can lay a foundation that he had reviewed the medical history and he knew what her condition was beforehand, then he can testify this is what her condition was beforehand and this is her medical condition, her condition afterwards. I might be prepared to reconsider my ruling. I don't know whether the trial court was going down this road or not, but since I'm thoroughly confused, I figured I would ask. Is it your understanding that the trial court said a chiropractor, this chiropractor can give testimony? He's an expert, fine. But the chiropractor can't give testimony as to causation because, A, the chiropractor hadn't examined the patient before the accident, and B, because the chiropractor is not a doctor and therefore couldn't review medical records of the patient's prior condition. Is that what was going on?
It was only A, Your Honor. It was only that he had not seen her directly before. And the way the discussion went, it would not have mattered if he had treated her before and had stopped treating her, and he could testify that this was different than before. What was explained is that causation really couldn't be determined unless the person testifying as causation had seen the injured person immediately before the injury and again afterwards.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I respectfully disagree that the trial court's main reason for disallowing the chiropractor to testify to causation was as what's been represented. I will submit to you that when I raised the issue at the pretrial conference, my argument to the trial judge was that the chiropractor's testimony, all of his testimonies, should be disallowed because as a basis for those opinions, he offered comments about the force of the impact and shearing forces that are created. And if you look at the judge's written order, she states specifically, the chiropractor will not be allowed to testify to the first two paragraphs that appear in his discussion section. And the chiropractor's report appears at A57. And if you look at the first two paragraphs of the discussion section, what you'll see is the chiropractor making comments such as, when a rapid cervical acceleration-deceleration injury like this occurs, the underlying ligaments and joint capsules are not protected by guarding muscles and become exposed to much greater forces than they can handle. There is an immense amount of shearing forces generated as the cervical spine is rapidly forced through excessive lateral flexion and rotation. This force is what causes the extensive amounts of damage to the facet joints as described in the literature. I will submit to you that that type of language is what initially, at least, caused the trial judge to determine that the chiropractor should not be allowed to testify as to causation. The other comment that I wanted to make was the plaintiff's attorney has argued that Dr. Gelman has bolstered the chiropractor's testimony that he stated that there was an injury related to the accident. Dr. Gelman's testimony, again, appears in the record, and he was asked, your opinion is that there was an injury related to this accident? And his response was, if you believe her history. And then he was asked by the plaintiff's attorney, do you have reasons not to believe her history? Do you have reasons not to believe her? And his answer was, yes. I have my own reasons.
But the jury might have had reasons to believe it. So wouldn't that provide the necessary link?
It would. But the big problem that I have with that, my big objection to all that, Your Honor, is that if the trial judge followed Rayfield versus Power and said, all right, if the plaintiff's expert isn't prepared to come forward and testify to causation, then that fails, and therefore the case is dismissed, then I wouldn't have had to present Dr. Gelman at all. I was forced, essentially, to present Dr. Gelman because the trial judge allowed the chiropractor to testify at all. I would submit to you that once she did that, I was in a no-win situation. If instead she had said no testimony to causation, therefore everything else is irrelevant, then I wouldn't have had to call Dr. Gelman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.